We are back in more ways than one this time with a wrestling podcast. We meet for the first time for the last time, as one Dark Helmet might say. I'm glad to be back. We have our own show again. I think this is like a transitional episode to when we get the band back together, finally. I'm Brian Kluger with Boomstick Comics, High Def Digest, and the radio show The Entertainment Answer. And I am joined by my colleague, my illustrious co-host, Tom Nix from San Antonio. How are you doing, buddy?
Good morning.
Vietnam or SummerSlam. We don't know what. We've had an interesting, several days, haven't we?
Yeah, it's been a tumultuous ride, to be sure. We're doing our own thing, aren't we?
We are doing our own thing. We had to part ways with the Fans Podcast Network, and we're happy to be our own brand again, which is to be determined, because Our good friend over on the West Coast in Orange County, Mike Pertil, still real to me, number 7, on Twitter.
Is he still real to you? He's been gone for 2 months.
He has. He has violated that wellness policy so much. We don't know if we're going to suspend him or not. We want him back so badly. He's the Roman Reigns to our Shield right now.
Basically.
And we miss him. He says he's going to be back. And I think when the trio reunites, I think we have a rebrand. We're going to have a new name. We're going to have a new concept. And we're real excited to tell you all about it. We're all working things out. We have all these really cool ideas. And it's going to be awesome. And we're not just going to talk about titles. We're going to talk about so much more. We're going to do in-depth conversations of wrestlers. We'll let you know that at a later date.
Man, it's going to be a sea change. I'm super glad that I'm very glad that we super kicked the Fans Podcast through the barbershop window last week.
Yes, we thank them for the opportunity, but it was best for us to do our own thing, because we're just a lot of fun. We have so many ideas. We don't want to be tied down to something.
Listen, man. You can't hold Shawn Michaels down, baby.
You can't. He's a sexy boy. He is a sexy boy. So yeah, it's Thursday night. We're in Texas right now, in different cities. I've got some wrestling on. We're going to talk about some WWE. We're going to talk about some CWC. We're going to talk about some NXT.
But before we talk about that, what wrestling do you have on tonight, Brian Kluger?
Oh my God, my wrestling pay-per-view on for the night. As you know, for our few listeners right now, or maybe our millions and millions of listeners, I put a wrestling pay-per-view on every time we record. And in this week, I have Unforgiven 2003, which is, if you recall, is when Goldberg defeated Triple H for the World Heavyweight Championship. And I just also want to let you know that this was also the pay-per-view that had Al Snow and Jonathan Coachman fighting Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler in the ring for a tag team match.
Yikes.
And then there was a triple threat match for the Intercontinental Championship between Christian, Chris Jericho, and RVD. And then there was a last man standing match, which was actually really fun, where Kane, by God, it's Kane, defeated the amazing Shane McMahon.
This was 2003, you said?
Yes.
Right?
Right.
Was this before or after Triple H made it seem like Kane killed a girl and then had sex with her corpse?
I remember that. I want to say that, oh man, because I thought it was in 2003, I thought, but I just can't remember what the timeline was, because, I mean, this pay-per-view was in September, so, oh man, it might have been before. Or, I mean, this might have, the pay-per-view might have been after, so Well,
yeah, you know. Yeah. Sure. Like I said, that's the one thing that sticks out in my memory about 2003, because it will never leave my memory ever. As much as I would like it to, and as many people as I have paid to help me forget it, never going to go away.
Yep, it's ingrained in our memory. But yeah, it's a fun pay per view. I mean, you had Randy Orton beating Shawn Michaels. You had the late wrestler Test defeating Scott Steiner. And you had Maven from the WWE reality show, defeating poor Steven Richards. We can't get enough of Steven Richards here. But let's talk about what's been going on. There's been some things going on. There's been new titles. There's been matches announced for SummerSlam. What do you got on your mind first, Tom?
Well, what I have on my mind is normally something I think I'd say for the end of the show for our champion of championships match, but since that might be going out the window, we'll see where that ends up. You know what's been on my mind, Brian Kluger?
What?
Dean freaking Ambrose has been on my mind.
I want you to tell me why.
I feel like Dean Ambrose is potentially the best WWE champion we have had in maybe two solid years. His promo on SmackDown was wall-to-wall incredible. He carries himself like a champion in a way that Seth Rollins never did, in a way that Roman Reigns wasn't allowed to because everyone hated him. I honestly look at Dean Ambrose as the face of SmackDown, as the main guy and the most important person on the roster, which I didn't think was ever possible, especially after how much I hated his Brock Lesnar match at WrestleMania, and I really thought he was just going to go the way of the dodo and, you know, always be around and always be a good player and always kind of hang out but never actually do anything. And, man, I'm so glad he has the belt. I'm so glad he set up his game. I don't want to say set up his game. He's kind of always been this good, but this, like, that championship looks right on him. And I thought his promo against Dolph Ziggler was incredible on SmackDown this week, where Dolph kind of was like, hey, you know, this is my first chance in a long time, and I'm going to take that thing from you, because here's what I had to deal with, and here's how I've always overcome, and here's, like, you know, I am better than everyone gives me credit for, and I will win the big one. And Dean's response was, no, you won't, because you never have. You never have won the big one. You know, you cashed in a Money in the Bank once, and then you lost it on your next match, and then the other title you had was given to you for 8 minutes, and then you lost it again. All you do is brag about how good you are, and then you lose. And I don't complain about my spot in the card. I don't complain about my spot in the company. I go out and I win matches, and I became champion. And I just thought it was exactly what it needed to be. It wasn't exactly a heel move. It was certainly a confidence and maybe a little cocky move. But he basically just, that promo is what I've wanted to see out of wrestling forever, which is not an overly scripted, I'm better, I'm better. It was just a, hey, I'm better. And the other person going, no, you're not. You're not champion. You're not better. So step up, because you can't beat me. And I just thought it was wonderful. So I'm not super sold on Dolph Ziggler being a face. I think this is a great time for a heel turn. But if you're going to keep him as the underdog, the way they wrote Dean Ambrose and the way he came across on SmackDown is impeccable, perfect. I'm so, so invested in that feud, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, because, you know, you finally have a champion, you know, that's not getting booed like Roman Reigns, who is up for a fight at any time, anywhere. And I think that's what people have been wanting, because beforehand we've had Triple H, we've had Seth Rollins, we've had Sheamus, and they just kind of run away from fights. And like every week, Ambrose is so good on the mic. He's owning everybody. He calls people out, and he's funny, and he gets the crowd going, and everybody loves him, and it's so good. And then you have Ziggler, who I think everybody still likes, but yeah, he just never goes anywhere, and he's been around a long time. And
yeah.
It's weird to have, you know, like a face versus face type of thing, but you know they're going to put on an amazing show at SummerSlam. They're going to do it. So,
oh, it's going to be an amazing match. But like the thing that makes Dean so right is that this match should have happened in 2014, because they just forgot about Dolph Ziggler for two solid years. I mean, he was just in throwaway nothing feuds that went nowhere, that he never won, that no, just everyone everyone forgot he existed. Like, yeah, okay, there's his music, we're supposed to like him, hooray, but he's fighting a nobody and it's not going to lead him to anywhere. Seeing him win the number one contendership was a genuine surprise for me. I didn't see that coming.
I didn't either.
And that's not bad. It's just I really needed to see how they were going to sell this because, like I said, I was like, we're kind of over Dolph Ziggler. Like, you've already told us that he's unimportant. I mean, shoot, 3 months ago, he was losing to Baron Corbin every week. Why now is he...
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to figure out because... There was one point a little while ago where Rusev and Dolph Ziggler were in a feud, and Ziggler and Lana were supposed to, you know, were hitting it off, and then, you know, Lana and Rusev got engaged in real life, and they had to drop that storyline. So I wonder if they had big plans for him there, but then that fell through, and then... You know, Dolph was being, you know, a good guy in real life as far as, like, putting over Baron Corbin and other wrestlers like that. And then they were like, okay, since you've done this for a little while, we're going to give you a huge bump. And I just hope that it's, you know, you want Dean Ambrose to still have the title, but you also, like, okay, so this is going to have Ziggler go all the way to the top only to lose it again. So, which I don't see him winning, so...
No, I don't see him winning either, but if he does, that'll be the story, is the guy that no one expects to win because he never has, and all of a sudden he is. The thing is that if Dolph Ziggler wins, I think the only thing you can do with Dean Ambrose is turn him into a heel. And personally, I think that dynamic works better the other way. Dean is so popular, and Dolph is popular to an extent... But I feel like his real life personality is kind of so cocky and show offish, and I'm better than everybody anyway. That making him, like, if he loses that match, if he just snaps and just starts beating the dog crap out of Dean Ambrose and starts taking it out on everybody because he's sick of losing and sick of not being, you know, the top guy, that would be a more interesting story than the underdog Dolph Ziggler pulling it out. And then Dean Ambrose getting, you know, upset that he lost to someone who he sees as beneath him and turning heel on him. Now again, I mean, we'll see where it goes. But either way, I am more psyched for Dolph versus Dean than I am any match on SummerSlam right now.
There's a couple other matches that I'm real excited about, but yeah, I cannot wait to see Ziggler and Ambrose face off, because, you know, Ziggler, his, like, kind of his shtick is, you know, it looks like he's about to lose, but then he gets up and he, like, runs, and he runs up the ropes or runs up the ladder at the last second and does, like, his finishing move. You're like, oh my gosh, he's going to do it.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's going to be a good match. They're going to put on a solid match. They're going... And I hope it continues after SummerSlam, because just them two right now are just so good. So, I don't know what's going to happen. I honestly don't see Ziggler winning, but Dean Ambrose will retain because he's selling merch. He's over. He knows what he's doing.
But, yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
Okay.
So Brian, what's lighting a fire under your balls this week?
Well, I would have to say it is, I bought a one-way ticket. And I have no plans on leaving Viperville. I'm having a bed and breakfast in Viperville right now. I'm just having a good time right there right now, because I love Randy Orton. I've always loved Randy Orton, and I'm just so glad he's back. I'm so glad he called out Brock Lesnar, and I'm so glad that he actually showed up on Raw. You had a SmackDown guy show up on Raw and RKO out of nowhere, and then Randy went into the crowd, like the thick of the crowd, and it was just so badass, and like I'd never seen a pop like that for Randy Orton before, and... Oh, it was just so good. I mean, yeah, you have Brock Lesnar in the ring. It's so good to see him again in the ring. And you have Paul Heyman doing his shtick. But then just to have Randy Orton there, and you're just like, oh, you know, you really feel like Randy Orton's going to beat Brock Lesnar this time. You really, like, feel it. Because they just build it so well. And that's, I got real excited about that. What do you think?
I thought the segment was really good. And, like, I'm kind of surprised that I'm as psyched for a Randy Orton match as I am. Because he's been one of those wrestlers where I functionally and actively know that he's very good. But he's never really been that exciting to me. But that was a very exciting segment on top of a very good promo he did with Jericho on the last pay-per-view, and I'm into it. I mean, I'm pumped about that match. I think it's going to be good, and I don't really know where they're going to go with it, because, I mean, you know, 3 months ago or when the match was announced, I was like, oh, Brock's going to kill Randy Orton. That's what's going to happen. But now with the whole drug bust and all that kind of stuff, from a storyline perspective, you don't really know what's going to happen, and they've really built Randy Orton as kind of one of those things where it's like, sure, you might be bigger and stronger than me, but if I manage to hit my RKO on you, which I can do at any time from anywhere, from any angle, you're down, and you're not getting up. And I think that's a really good way to play this match is, yeah, you might be the beast incarnate, and you might be able to take punishment, but I just proved that I can hit you with one move, and you can't get back up from it. That's a good angle.
Yep, and I've got to give props to Raw this past week of opening Monday Night Raw with Sasha Banks, man. Yep. That was killer. That was so good. And I love that Sasha Banks and Charlotte were there arguing, then Jericho came out, then Enzo came out, and it was so amazing. I'm just glad they had the first like 45 minutes of Raw. It was like the 22-minute promo and then the match. That was cool.
Yeah, Raw has definitely made improvements. Now, I think this week it kind of slipped back into being what it kind of always was, and it wasn't as perfect as its debut episode. But they're certainly moving in the right direction, and it wasn't bad this week by any means. It just kind of was like, oh, okay, we're kind of settling into that sort of formula that we're used to seeing. Because that first episode 2 weeks ago, just structurally was so different than any Raw has been in so long that I was really hoping that would be kind of how it would go from here on out. But and aside from Stephanie and Mick kind of taking a back seat again, like they didn't have a ton of segments, which is good. I feel like a lot of the ebb and flow of Raw felt a lot more familiar to me. And again, you know, that is what it is. It's not like it's getting bad. It just, I really wish they would have held on to that momentum they had from week one. But the choice of opening Raw with not only a women's match, but like a women's segment was inspired and great. And I am very happy that they, honest to God, are treating Sasha Banks like one of their most important stars, which she should be because she is.
Yeah, she is that good, and I'm glad they brought back the mixed gender matches. That was really cool. I'm glad they're doing that. And you know what? You know, moving on from that, I'm so confused. I don't know why they're doing this. Why is Titus O'Neil now a bad guy against Darren Young?
I don't know. I think it's because they both don't really have a direction, but what a weird match to set up. Like, I get the whole idea of it's like, hey, you know, we are, like, okay, it's a new era and a new show, so everyone has to, like, prove their worth or whatever, but it's just such an odd idea, and so many matches this week and last week were on that. Like, the Cesaro-Sheamus match was basically like, oh, yeah, we have to fight each other to prove that we belong on the show. What do you mean we belong on the show? You picked us. You chose us to be on the show. Of course we belong on the show. It's just a weird storytelling mechanism. But if anyone's going to be a heel in that match, I think it should be Titus, because he's bigger and stronger and isn't quite as good on the mic and doesn't have the Bob Backlund bump. And obviously he's a shitty dad who can't beat a foreigner on Father's Day. So he should be a bad guy.
I agree. And speaking of the foreigner, our favorite Machka man, Rusev.
Machka, Machka man.
You've got to beat that Machka man. Mark Henry out of nowhere. And I thought Mark Henry was going to die if Rusev did the complete submissive move where he just leaned back. I was like, oh my God, Mark Henry does not bend that way. But he didn't, thank God, and Mark Henry's still with us. But I guess it was Mark Henry's turn to lose, you know, which he always does usually. So I'm curious, since they're billing Rusev now as like this unbeatable guy, who's going to be the one to actually beat Rusev? Because he's on Raw, who's going to beat him?
Well, I don't think it's going to be Roman Reigns. That's obviously the next feud they're leading into SummerSlam, which I think, personally, I think they rushed that a little bit. I think Roman should have had a non-title feud with somebody before getting into Rusev. But I honestly don't think that Roman Reigns will win the U.S. belt.
How pissed will you be if he actually spears and wins or kicks out of that move?
I will be a little mad because even though it's not the world title, it's still a pretty prestigious title because of the person that holds it. Rusev is on yet another undefeated streak. And even though Roman Reigns is 100% certainly the most pedigreed person that he has fought in this new iteration of Rusev, or I guess the reboot iteration of Rusev. I really think it's going to be too much too soon again. I feel like if Roman pins Rusev, they're going to have the exact same problem of boos and jeers because this guy, basically took 2 weeks off from beating everybody, and now he's back to beating everybody. So I think this is a perfect opportunity for Roman to lose via tap out, which he's never done before, ever. If he loses via tap out to Rusev, not only does that make Rusev look freaking awesome, it also makes the U.S. title look freaking awesome, which then if Cesaro beats him, or if Sheamus beats him, or if anyone else beats him, immediately that U.S. belt has legit prestige because even Roman Reigns couldn't get it. That means a big, big thing for that U.S. title. And even if Roman beats him at WrestleMania, if the story is Roman is working to get his glory back and he just can't seem to win anymore, but he finally starts winning and finally starts winning and he gets his moment at WrestleMania against Rusev and becomes the guy that pins him, I honestly have no problem with that. It's just not right now. That's not the right time to tell that story.
I agree. I think that, because I can't imagine that spear or the Superman punch takes out Rusev, because people are not going to like that. And I really think that if Rusev beats Roman, Rusev's supposed to be the bad guy. He's going to be a good guy. He's going to be a face.
Yeah, it's the Seth Rollins effect, you know? I mean, you've got a great professional wrestler, and what WWE is slowly realizing, but it is taking a long time, is that people react to how good of a wrestler you are, not what kind of character you play necessarily. Because they know, like, fans know that this is quote-unquote entertainment. It's not like fake versus real versus, you know, like the 80s or 90s where people would be like, oh, it's fake, you're stupid. But, like, the audience knows, because the title is World Wrestling Entertainment, the audience knows that these wrestlers are playing a character. But their wrestling ability is actually real. That's something that we can latch on to and say, this person is a better wrestler than this person, because we can physically, tangibly see that. And even casual audiences pick up on that. They love or want to love Seth Rollins because he's great as a wrestler. And Rusev gets booed a lot, but he's great as a wrestler. And Roman is good. He's very good. But he does have a reliance on those silly, you know, signature moves. And that rings fake. Like, that rings false to a lot of people, because the Superman punch is just a punch, and the spear looks bad. And I think if you want to save Roman Reigns, you have him lose to Rusev, you have him stop doing the Superman punch, you have him stop doing the spear, or at least not as much, and you give him a little bit more of a tweaked moveset that plays more to his power. I think I might have said this last week, but, like, what are you doing having one of the biggest, strongest guys on the roster having both of his finishers be strike moves? That's not what you do. Like, he should be lifting people off the ground and slamming them as hard as he can. That is his body type, his wrestling style. That fits him, and that will get him over. Having a 270-pound, 6'4" Samoan who leaps daintily in the air and punches them with a fist does not shriek, you know, all-powerful alpha male to me.
I agree. I totally agree. So let's talk about our two favorites, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens.
Oh God, they're the best.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I like how they've basically stayed separate since their match at what was it? What was the last
Battleground?
Battleground. KO did his little commentary, and Sami had his match with Rollins. And while I hope they don't keep him separate for too long, I mean, they're both just good, great wrestlers, and I like seeing them perform. It was a bummer to not see Owens perform on Raw, or if he did, I must have missed it. I watched the Hulu cut. But, I'm happy for both of them, but that's one of those pairings where, like, I just absolutely am flabbergasted why they're not on separate brands. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it's definitely weird. But I guess they have plans for them on Raw, so who knows. And we have to talk about it, and it's upsetting. I just don't see Bray Wyatt getting to the top anymore since his second injury.
Yeah, it's a bummer, man. Like, he's always borderline there. And it's a bummer. It's a bummer that both times when he's kind of been on the cusp of really being important, he has to take a back seat. Now, according to the reports, this injury is basically a rolled ankle.
Yeah.
And it doesn't prevent him from being on TV or cutting some promos, whatever he needs to do. So maybe he can work it out for a couple months and still have a good match at SummerSlam. But this has happened enough that, you know, the powers that be might be like, hey, we just can't put, you know, a top title or a top feud with this guy because he's injured himself, you know, twice in 2 months. And that's just not, we can't take that risk for him to have to vacate it or whatever happens. So it's a bummer because I like Bray Wyatt. He's been stale for quite a long time, but I thought his stuff this week where he just appeared out of the blackness and took Dolph Ziggler out, and I thought their match was really good. I feel like he has something there, and he's a good fit for SmackDown. So it's just a bummer. That's all you can say is, like,
yeah, I wish, I wish the best for him, but I want to see him at the top, but it's just going to be really tough to, like you said, like, it's just being injured. And you know it's funny because what did Neville suffer? Didn't he have a rolled ankle or a sprained ankle? He was out forever.
I think it was a sprained ankle, yeah.
And he was out for, I mean, he's been out for a while, or he was out for a while.
Yeah, I think he came back last, on the debut episode of Raw, he came back for a match, but I don't think he was on this episode of Raw. But also, I think they didn't really have much to do for him because he is kind of a weird, you know, character that doesn't fit into a lot of main title stuff. Excuse me, at the moment. So, hopefully they find a good feud for him. And like I said, hopefully Bray's injury wasn't as bad as we think it is, because he could be a really big building block for SmackDown. I don't know where to put him next, because a feud with Ziggler would actually be really good, but a feud with Dean wouldn't be good, because I don't think either person will come out looking better from that feud. You can't put him against Cena, because we know how that ended. You can't put him against AJ, because they're both heels. And there really isn't anyone else on SmackDown. Like, there's no one else that's even close to being the main event. It's, like, four people or three people that are, like, basically actual legit main eventers. And one or two that are kind of hanging around there, like Bray and Dolph. And everyone else is, like, lower mid-card. I mean, as much as they want to push Apollo Crews, you know, do anyone think he's even close to a main event talent? I don't.
No. I mean, I like them, but it's, yeah, that's what was my next question. Do you think there's going to be trades upcoming because Raw has so many of these talents that I think should be on SmackDown or vice versa? Do you think there'll be trading soon?
I hope they don't. I hope they do eventually, but I hope they give the rosters at least 2 to 3 months, like a full quarter, where they can establish who the stars are, how the show works, what actually sets them apart from each other. Because if they start trading after SummerSlam, nothing's established yet. So I hope they give them till at least Survivor Series, where they are just laying the playing field out, saying, here's where John Cena fits in SmackDown, and here's where AJ Styles fits in SmackDown, and here's where Roman Reigns fits in Raw, and here's where Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn fit in Raw, and here's where Cesaro fits, and here's where the women fit, you know, that kind of stuff. So I'd like to see some trades, because I think Cesaro is a no-brainer for SmackDown. He's right there at the main event, and he would make such a huge difference on that show. Just him and him alone would make a massive, massive impact on SmackDown. But we need to let these brands really breathe and have an identity, because I don't honestly think they have one yet. I don't think either show really knows what it wants to be quite yet.
I agree. I mean, they're doing more or less the same thing, and you have, you know, your favorite wrestlers on SmackDown, favorite wrestlers on Raw, but
they have different sets. They have nominally different camera angles. They have, you know, like, SmackDown has the whole side thing where, like, the name comes on the side instead of from the bottom. Like, there's tiny design changes that have happened, but SmackDown itself doesn't seem structurally any different than it used to be. And Raw, except for the first episode, didn't really seem any different structurally than it used to be. It's just maybe a little more a bit more focus on the women, a bit more focus on wrestling, a bit less focus on the GMs. But we don't really know, like, because, like, to me, like, if I was going over this stuff, I'd be like Shane McMahon's been talking about changing the WWE for ever since he got back, so basically 5 months. And he hired someone who is the best technical wrestler in the world, or was before he was forced to retire. There is absolutely no reason that in kayfabe, those two people would be absolutely laser-focused on providing the best wrestling show they possibly could, because that is their characters. That is what Shane explicitly said when he came back. And we all know who Daniel Bryan is, and we all know what he stands for. It seems like they're not really doing anything with the GMs and letting their personalities dictate how the show should be structured and what really gets their attention and what should really earn you a title shot and, you know, all that stuff. And it just really does seem it's like, hey, you know, Daniel and Shane are good GMs, so they're bad to bad guys, and Shane or Stephanie's kind of both, but Mick's a nice person, so they're mostly good to the good guys and mostly bad to the bad guys. But they don't really have any kind of, like, hey, this is my show, this is what I've wanted to do forever, this is how I'm going to structure it, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, this is what I stand for. There's been no mission statement for why Raw exists and why SmackDown exists, so I hope in the next 3 months they really get a grip on what structurally and spiritually, if that's a word you can do for wrestling, makes this show different.
Yeah, that's why I'm hoping, you know, Shane and Daniel Bryan bring back, you know, a hardcore title. The cruiserweight title goes there. I mean, I'm hoping they're like trying to be like...
Because the Cruiserweights are on Raw. That's already been established.
So they need to do something. They didn't need to even make it like the PG-13 era on SmackDown or something like that to just separate the two. Because, if you don't, you're just going to have a five-hour Raw, basically, over 2 days.
Which, if the wrestling is good, the wrestling is good. But I need a hook. You did a brand split, and you really drove home the fact that you wanted it to be separate and different. And SmackDown having a Sports Center type desk in the backstage isn't really doing anything. Okay, it looks different. Raw doesn't do that. So what? It's a desk. That doesn't mean anything.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. And so. The other big main event for SummerSlam right now is Finn Balor and Seth Rollins. A, do you think this is going to be an amazing match? And B, do you think they're going to push Finn all the way to the top already?
So, I don't know if it will be an amazing match, because here's the thing with Finn Balor. He's great, but he's limited great. He's basically cruiserweight John Cena. I want to see how he sells for Rollins, and I want to see if he can bust out moves that aren't his four core moves. Like, if he's only out there hitting sling blades and stomps and, rope kicks, it's not, okay, that's great. You're really good at those. Do something else. And I don't want to act like I'm turning on Finn Balor. I am not turning on Finn Balor. But if they're going to push him to the top, I would like to see him work a legitimate 25-minute match that pulls something out of him that we haven't seen for a while, because he basically ruled NXT with an iron fist for a long time, and all he had to do was come out in his makeup and do the exact same match 12 times in a row, and everyone would eat it up all the time, because he's super charismatic, he's super athletic, he does amazing things in the ring, but it's always kind of the same things in the ring. That's why I think his best match in NXT was against Shinsuke, because Shinsuke is so weird and different that Finn had to do something different. Like, he couldn't just do his, normal power moves, because Shinsuke doesn't play that game. He's on a whole different level than everybody else.
Right.
So I'm hoping that Seth Rollins, being probably pound for pound the best wrestler in the world, they really work something out and have an interesting match. But to answer your second question, I have no doubt in my mind that Finn Balor will become the first ever Universal Champion. I have no doubt in my mind.
Really?
And the reason I say that, twofold. And actually, this is a question asked by one of our listeners, Ron Perti, on Twitter. He asked, let me pull it up real fast. It's kind of a rephrasing of what you asked me, but let me make sure that I give his question the correct respect. His question was, let's see, I gotta stop getting in conversations on Twitter. I lose the thread here. Okay, his question was, I don't see it. So anyway, his question was basically do you think they're going to push Finn Balor all the way? There we go. What are the chances that Finn Balor actually wins the title at SummerSlam? So personally, I think it is 100%. Well, nothing is 100% in WWE, so I will say 90% Finn Balor will win. And here's why I think Finn Balor will win. Number one, if Seth Rollins needs to get over as a heel, he needs to get over as I believe that I am the best, but I am provably not the best, which makes me angrier and makes me more bitter and makes me more whiny. So I think it's good for Seth's character to lose, because then he can unleash a violent streak on Finn. He can be more of a, crafty, cowardly heel, whatever. I think a legitimate title loss, which was his only goal coming back, was win that belt. And he won the belt for what? 45 seconds, 1 minute, before Dean took it away from him, and then he lost a one-on-one match clean. He lost triple threat match clean. He's basically proving that he fluke won the belt, and now he can't get it back. It's a good character beat for Seth. But number one, my number one reason why I think Finn Balor is a lock to win that title, twofold. Number one, it establishes that NXT means something. It establishes that the people who come from NXT are just as good or better than the people on Raw and SmackDown. I think that's very important to say. Now that the end happened, or NXT the end is over, and Triple H basically said, we want to end the idea that NXT is quote-unquote developmental, I think it's very important out the gate to have the very first big name NXT call-up that was made a big deal out of. I think it's very important to put him over. And number two, Finn Balor is coming out at SummerSlam in the Demon Paint.
Yes.
And if he loses his first match in the Demon Paint, you destroy the Demon Paint. It's gone. It has no mystique. It has no value. You can't sell shirts off of it. It doesn't mean a goddamn thing. So I feel like he is as locked could be to win that belt.
Man, you put it that way, and you're just like, how can he not win now? But then it's Seth Rollins. But you know, Seth Rollins can go on to any other feud he wants to.
And Finn can lose the belt. Like, he can lose the belt relatively soon. I don't think he needs to have the streak he had in NXT by any means, because he is in a whole different world. And there are Roman Reigns here, and there are Seth Rollins here, and there are Cesaros here, and there are Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn here. There's a lot of reasons why he could lose that belt. But I just think, given him going in, there has to be a clear message that, you know, we called him up for a reason. NXT means something. So that way, when Shinsuke comes up, he is an immediate superstar. When Samoa Joe comes up, he is an immediate superstar. When the Revival come up, they are immediate superstars. Because we have established that if you're not watching NXT, you are missing out on some of the best talent we have to offer.
Right. Yeah. When Shinsuke comes up, I think he'll just dominate. At least I hope so.
When Shinsuke comes up, I'm going to come out my dick.
Yeah, and all over the place. that's going to happen. Yeah, is there anything from Raw and SmackDown else we need to talk about before we move on?
I don't think so. They're both solid shows this week. They weren't bad again. I mean, I think SmackDown's really struggling to find its footing. Like I said, I don't really think it knows what it's supposed to be yet. Where Raw kind of has an idea, but they haven't fully formed it yet. So this is going to be interesting to like check back on them in 3 months and see how they've built their own mythology up. So. Solid shows. It's been good since the brand split. I'm super glad that the brands are legitimate, 100% separate, with the exception of the Randy Orton Brock Lesnar thing, which is okay because that feud was announced before the split happened. So having them intermix, just like how like all the Shield members, you know, were together for. Battleground, even though they technically were split, they're still having matches because they were booked before the split. I'm totally fine with Orton and Lesnar kind of sneaking in on each other because this has been building for 2 months. Other than that, I love that they're 100% separate. 100% separate.
Yeah, I am glad too. You want to talk about the CWC, the Cruiserweight?
We can. Yes, I would like to talk about that. I thought this episode was pretty damn good. First of all, let's talk about how awesome Rich Swann is.
Oh my goodness!
I feel like the only criticism I could have of that entire match is that Rich was maybe having too much of a good time. And not treating his, like, Bruce Lee Kung Fu opponent as though it was actually a threat. But the dude is just so good and so entertaining and so fun to watch and so awesome. He did 2 standing 450 splashes. That's insane.
Dude, that is insane. That's like his thing. I mean, isn't... One of his moves is the chicken fried driver, which is going to come into play with the cross-faced chicken wing at some point. But a spinning vertical suplex pile driver. I mean, that is, he does crazy moves.
Yeah. He is... I tweeted this when the CWC was going on, but I legitimately... If Rich Swann somehow ends up in the finals, if Rich Swann beats Ibushi, I have no, because I'm just assuming that, no spoilers, apologies, I don't know anything, but let's just be honest, I think we all kind of know that Kota Ibushi is going really goddamn far in this thing, so I feel like the final four on the right side of the bracket, it's going to come down to Rich Swann versus Ibushi. That's my guess. I have no idea. I would be delighted if Rich Swann goes to the finals and probably fights Zack Sabre Jr. I mean, again, who knows? But
that would be such a crazy matchup, because you have one, on one hand, you have the crazy move guy, and on the other hand, you have like the Lance Storm technical wrestler guy, and that could be a really cool match.
Yeah, so we'll see. I don't know what's going to happen, and I've really enjoyed every show so far. But Rich Swann, I think, really made a ton of fans on that first match. The second match was Jack Gallagher against Fabian Aichner? Was that the second match?
There was Who was it?
There was also Noam Dar versus one of the Sierra brothers.
The Noam Dar versus Ho Ho Lun, right?
No, Ho Ho Lun was like the first week. I think he fought Gurv Sierra. I gotta look that up.
Gurv Sierra.
He did fight. He was one of the Bollywood boys. It was Noam Dar versus Gurv Sierra. Because I think the matchups were Rich Swann versus Jason Lee.
Oh, you're right.
It was Gurv Sierra. That was a good match. I like Noam Dar. I've seen him in Revolution Pro. I had no idea he was as young as he is. 22 is insane. The dude looks like he's in his 30s and performs like he's in his 30s. So the sheer fact that he's that young is mind-blowing. But I'm glad he took a win. But I do hope that the Bollywood boys get a look in NXT. I think they could be in a great tag team addition to NXT, because they are so charismatic and goofy and fun, and they're good wrestlers. They're not like, you know, top of the heap, like we need to be like signing these guys immediately because they can go with the best of them, but they have personalities that you don't really see in tag team wrestling, like legit charismatic personalities. So I hope they get something down the line, because I think having a legit from India Indian tag team full of super charismatic high flyers that are fun to watch is nothing but upsides for WWE.
Yeah, I hope so.
So both mid matches I liked quite a bit. I really liked seeing Jack Gallagher. I've seen him a couple times as well for Progress Wrestling out of the UK. I'm a member of their streaming service, so I've watched a couple of his matches. But I thought he did awesome in his debut match in front of a big American audience. I really thought they'd turn on him because he's so hipstery and so foppish and so weird and so dainty. But he really sold his style of wrestling, especially against that bigger opponent. I thought that matchup was exactly perfect. Like, it needed to be a big, strong dude and kind of a undersized, even though obviously muscular, like foppish man who just wins off of determination and grappling and smarts. I think Jack Gallagher made a very, 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 very strong first impression, and I hope he goes a little farther too.
I do too. Yeah, the CWC is just so much fun to watch, because it really is just match after match after match, and you get to see these guys really just perform what they do best. And I mean, I wish there was room for all of them in WWE or NXT at some point.
But Ryan,
yes,
let's talk about that main event
of CWC.
Yes.
Are you referring to, which one are you referring to? Are you referring to the Johnny Grodno Tommaso?
I'm talking about Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa, the tag team partners colliding in what I think was obviously the best match of the night and one of the best matches of the year from a storytelling perspective. I thought that match was off the chain awesome.
I am going to agree with that because both guys are from the U.S. and you know, and it was, there's just so much to that match. And even though it was like, you know, it was a long match for being on the CWC. So, I mean,
yeah, it was the first time that the announcers like really said like, hey, this match could go to 20 minutes because we have time limits here.
Yeah.
And if it does, they're both out and that sucks. Like that was the first match where the 20 minute time limit really came into play. And that was a good narrative thing. But man, like, granted, I'm an independent wrestling guy, so I've seen Johnny Gargano before. I know I've got friends in Cleveland that worship him because he's a Cleveland staple. He lives there. He's from there. He wrestles there all the time. And Tommaso Ciampa is, I mean, his actual nickname is the Psycho Killer. He's the Sicilian or the Sicilian psychopath. When he shows up in Ring of Honor or when he shows up in an independent wrestling ring, everyone is terrified of him because he is 180 pounds of pure will fucking kill you. That is all he does.
So yeah.
But I really thought like the opening promos were odd to me because they were actually cutting like antagonistic promos on each other, which given they're a tag team in NXT and they're about to challenge for the tag team titles, I think that was odd to me to hear such an antagonistic approach, but it sold the match because both of them were like, hey, we're best friends, and I get it, but there's shit that you do that really pisses me off. That's just like any relationship. Yeah, your best friends do shit that make you want to punch them in the fucking face, and that is what this got to. So when they got in the match, it was Gargano, who is like the technical mastermind and super fun to watch and kind of high-flying and just is not like carefree or any by any means, but he's definitely more loose. And you've got Tommaso Ciampa, who, aside from that Samoa Joe match a couple months ago, he really hasn't gotten to like be the Psycho Killer in WWE. He's kind of had to be Johnny Gargano's buddy, who's good at wrestling but won't kill you. And when he showed up in this match, it was hitting the Alpamare on the ring apron, and he was doing the powerbomb lung blower, and he was just slapping the shit out of Johnny Gargano.
Yeah.
That was like the first Psycho Killer we got to see in WWE, and I feel like it's one of those like only my best friend who I know can take it, who I know I won't hurt because we've done this thousands of times. I can bring that back out of me. So I thought that was a great storytelling thing, and the fact that Johnny won basically just by, well, A, let me get to that first. I love the moment where Tommaso took his knee pad off and was basically going to just jack Johnny in the face with a running knee, but he didn't do it because this is my friend. That's needlessly cruel. And one of the things he said in his opening introduction or interview was, I never hit with the intent to injure, but I do hit with the intent to hurt. And I think that sentence really kind of struck him back at himself and said, hey, I could win this match, but if I hit this guy with everything I've got with no protection, I could really hurt, like legitimately injure my best friend. I'm not going to let that happen. And that was kind of the beginning of the end, was they still had a good match after that, but Johnny kind of took advantage. He pinned him with just a pinning combination. No one won because, like, I think clearly the story here was that Tommaso was the better wrestler and could have taken this victory had he gone after it. But Johnny caught him off guard. He caught him when he was down, and he won. And that's fine and a good ending. But what sold it for me, and I apologize, I'm not letting you talk, I'm just into this match 100, 100, 100, was when they went for the handshake after the match and Tommaso just shrugged it off and tried to leave because, yeah, he's upset. He's upset that he had weakness. He's upset that he let his best friend take advantage of, quote-unquote, his kindness. But
yeah.
Then he stops, comes back in, he sits, and Johnny sits on the floor because he's bummed. Like, I won. I know Tommaso's mad about it, but we're friends, and I want that to still be important. So when Tommaso kind of says, no, man, you know, I'll come back to that. I don't hate you, but not right now. that really hurt Johnny Gargano. So when he came back in and sat down next to him and hugged him after that, I was done. I was like, this is the best match I've seen, you know, that's not... That story was perfect from beginning to end. And it ties back into, hopefully, NXT Brooklyn, where those two guys are going to challenge the Revival for the belts, which, by the way, I saw that match twice last weekend. They did it at the house shows, and it was the best match of the night and one of the best matches of the year when those two fight the Revival. So if they are able to top that at Brooklyn, it is going to be unreal, and it tells the story of two people that are now better because they fought each other. Gargano has the confidence back that I can beat anybody because I can beat Tommaso. And Tommaso has his mean streak back because I'm hitting lung blowers and I'm doing this and I'm just whipping the shit out of people. It made them both better to go after that to go after those NXT tag titles. So I am in love with that match. Everything about it is awesome.
Yeah, that's I'm looking forward to it so much. I am. So before we end our podcast, before we end this new podcast, our transition to our rebranding, we have to bring up the news that came out a day or two ago. And do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't. There's a lot of news that happens every day. So no, I don't know what the news is.
WWE filed some trademark applications for King of the Ring. Rumoring that they're going to bring King of the Ring back, and it might be on a SmackDown or Raw brand. What do you think about this?
I love King of the Ring. It was one of my favorite. Things in the early 2000s before they killed it. I liked it because it put a showcase on mid-card talent and made them into main event talent if you pushed them right. So I'm all for King of the Ring. I think the ones they've done the last couple years have kind of felt like afterthoughts. So if they make this into an actual pay-per-view, like they used to have it be a, you know, basically an entire pay-per-view, I'm all for it. I think it would be awesome. The only thing is I don't know if you can make it. I think if you do this next year, if you do it in 2017, I think by then that would be a really good way to introduce a cross-branded tournament, because then each person is fighting to be King of the Ring. Raw sends their best, SmackDown sends their best, and whoever wins it, like, it's not a title you defend, it's bragging rights, basically. So I think that would be a great cross-branded tournament.
That would be awesome, and, you know, Shane McMahon has said this, and I think Kurt Angle has said this, that their favorite matches were against each other at King of the Ring. So yeah. What do you think if Kurt Angle returns, there would be a rematch of Kurt Angle and Shane McMahon at a future
King of the Ring? I like that everything, that basically this is only big news to you because there is a potential that Kurt Angle comes back.
I know. I've got to bring it up every time because it will happen. Just like when Shane came back, I remember you tweeted like, Brian's going to lose his shit.
So, I don't want to see Shane McMahon, Kurt Angle 2, because they're both way too old, and they just can't do what they did in 2001. It's not that era anymore. It would be too dangerous for both of them to do it. That match is what it is. Love it. It's basically perfect for like who's involved with it, but I don't want to see it again. If I want to see Angle back, I think the way to bring Angle back is to let Roman Reigns get beat at SummerSlam, let Rusev beat someone else, and let Angle challenge him down the line for the U.S. belt as a return match, like a surprise debut where, okay, that U.S. belt needs to go to the most U.S. wrestler of all time. If you're going to bring Kurt Angle back, I would throw him against Rusev ASAP.
That would be really, really cool.
So, like I said, guys, this is a transitional episode. We're not really doing titles anymore. We don't really have a theme, per se, and also we're missing one of our core team members. This is one of those rare two-people podcasts because Mike Pertil can't stop taking Adderall.
Yeah, he's he's on that wellness policy violation kick. So we'll get him back. We're going to get the band back together. We're going to have some really cool episodes coming up too. And we thank you for joining us and sticking with us through all of this. So we'll see you next week for sure. Hey,
since this is a traditional episode, and I don't really have shame in stealing a segment from one of the most popular wrestling podcasts out there, We Watch Wrestling. Hey, Brian, who's your favorite wrestler this week?
My favorite wrestler this week? Who is my favorite? I'm going to say Randy Orton. He's my favorite wrestler this week because he was just a badass. He said so much that so many wrestlers want to say in like 3 weeks, and he said it all without saying anything in like 45 seconds.
Yeah, man. I got no problem with that. I'm glad you're enjoying your trip to Viperville.
I am. I'm not coming back for a little while. What about you? Who's your favorite wrestler of the week?
I feel like my gut instinct is to say Dean Ambrose because that's how I led the podcast off. But because I talked about it so much, I got to say the Psycho Killer, man. Tommaso Ciampa just was freaking unbelievable in that match. So I'm all aboard the Psycho Killer bandwagon.
Dan, that's good. What if we got him in onto the main card? What would that happen? Well, we'll talk about that next week.
Man, do I get a fantasy book Ciampa's U.S. title win? Because I'll do that for hours.
Yeah, we'll have to do that another show. But yeah, we'll be back next week. We'll probably have Mike Pertil finally for his return. We're going to give him so much shit. He's going to give us so much shit. We're excited. So thanks.
Please, hey, listeners of this podcast, please send us audio of you booing into a microphone so we can edit that together into one giant boo and play it for my Mike Pertil when he comes back.
Yes, that is going to happen. All right, we'll see you next week.